Hi there, I'm Justin Patton. I'm Senior Curator at Christchurch Art Gallery. Thanks for picking up this audio guide. I'm going to talk about the exhibition called The Naked and the Nude. And a nice place to start is right at the entry to the show, where you see on either side of the title graphic for the exhibition two very similar but very different nudes. And the whole idea for the show actually began with the work on the left. It's a photograph by Steve Carr. It's called The Bachelor, A Shot in the Dark, and it features, of all things, a none-too-trim white male with his thumbs tucked in his armpits, and he's doing an imitation of all things, a moose. And it's a play on the idea of the trophy bachelor, the kind of catch that eligible young women try and pick up on the reality TV show of the same name. But Steve's specimen doesn't look like the most well-groomed individual on the block, and he's emphatically naked. He's not an ideal nude. He's not perfect. He's not buff. He's not shapely. He doesn't conform to the old art historical ideal. But we do have that old art historical ideal on the other end of the wall, where there's a work by the painter Leonard Booth, which is based on one of the most famous nudes in all art history, a work called The Roque be Venus by Velázquez, the great Spanish painter. And in this case we see the nude, a figure who is not naked but is rather idealized, who conforms to an idea of the body which we find right throughout art history. Now, Booth's figure is not vulgar and in-your-face and grittily real like Steve Carr's naked male figure at the other end of the wall. She is idealized, and she conforms to an ideal of the nude which you can track through centuries of Western art history. And I think that's a key thing to note about this show, that although it's an exhibition about nude and naked bodies in art, it's also an exhibition about art itself and about the way in which this idea of the body, which is a constant in art for centuries, is played out in many different ways and serves as a kind of vessel for many different thoughts about what art can be. So this is not just a show in which you get to look at naked bodies, you also get to think about how we look and why we look and what has been considered the right thing to look at in the context of art and art galleries. So head on around the corner, and if you, you'll see straight ahead a sculpture of a bathing Venus by Terry Stringer, and to the right of that, a work by Evelyn Page called Summer Morn. It's from 1929. It's a really well-known work from the Christchurch Art Gallery collection. And it's an unusual work because it's from a time when many New Zealand artworks featured empty, unpeopled, and quite stark landscapes. The whole Canterbury regionalist tradition is about to get underway in the early 1930s. And this has always been a striking painting to me because it looks so sunny and optimistic and guilt-free. We have the bather posed in a classic contrapposto position, lights playing on the water, and this is a New Zealand scene. It's actually in near Karamea on the west coast, not a place many of us associate with nude bathing, but nonetheless, this is one of the happiest and most unashamed paintings in the exhibition, I think. What's striking about it is that this work was kept under wraps for decades. The model in the painting was so embarrassed when it first went on public display that she asked not to have it displayed during her own lifetime. So this is a work that viewers have only encountered in recent years, and it goes to show that even the most mild and cheerful seeming nude painting still has the power to cause a strong reaction on the part of viewers and indeed those who appear in the paintings. So spin around from Page's Summer Morn, and you'll see straight ahead and to the left a group of works which relate to one of the most obvious places in which nude bodies appear, and that is the life drawing class. Until contemporary art, modern art, comes along in the 20th century, the body is seen as the measure of all things in art. And for almost any artist coming through an academic system, through art schools, the way in which you come to grips visually with the wider world is to begin with the body. In the life class, you take pencil to paper and try and articulate on a flat surface the way in which forms relate to each other in three dimensions. So drawing the body was a kind of preparation for tackling the world at large. So we have a salon hang of many different iterations of the body, and the three biggest works on the wall are by W.A. Sutton, a very well-known Christchurch artist who you can also see in the exhibition Brought to Light upstairs. And Sutton for many years ran a life drawing class at the Canterbury School of Fine Arts. And these works, which are made round about 1969, date from a period of crisis in the art of life drawing. This is a moment when art schools are famously beginning to throw out their plaster casts and no longer make life drawing compulsory. And for some people, that means that art from there on in goes to hell in a handbasket. And for others, it means that a period of liberation opens up. Maybe I'll leave that for you to make a call on. And for a vivid sense of how our thoughts about life drawing have changed, turn to the right of the salon hang, where you'll see two colour works hanging side by side on the end wall. And these are two takes on the life drawing class from round about a century apart. On the left is a study by Petrus van der Velden, the very well-known Dutch artist who came to New Zealand. And you see the figure in this small painting appears to be reaching up into the top of the composition. And the supposition is that he is in fact hanging on to the kind of rope that would hang from the ceiling of a life drawing room and would be used by the life model to sustain a pose, because of course keeping your arm up like that for minutes and potentially hours on end was going to be hard work. Beside van der Velden is Di French, a postmodern artist. It's a work from the late 20th century, and it's a work in which the artist is thinking in a political way about what it means to portray the human body and what it means to be a woman artist looking at men rather than the other way around. And in this image we see the artist's silhouette projected into this cave-like space, and she seems to be measuring herself against these fragments of the classical past. Okay, let's keep wandering. Head through the large doorway, give a nod to Bingdor's grotesque figure pulling a face as you go through. And if you turn left, you'll see a group of works, all of which are photographs. And chances are, if a controversy breaks out around the art of the nude in the 21st century, the nude in question will not be oil on canvas. It will not be a painting. It will be a photographic image. This is true of Robert Mapplethorpe in America. It's true of Jeff Koons in America. It's also true of Christine Webster, a New Zealand artist, who is the maker of the large diptych, the two-part work called Blood, on the end wall. And the reasons for this are interesting to think about. We think of photography as an art which takes us closer to the real world, to be less artificial than oil on canvas, than painting. What's interesting about all the artists gathered here, however, is how much artifice there is in their work. Fiona Partington, Di French, Christine Webster, they all make works in which there's a strong sense of the scene being set up and staged. And, to say the obvious thing, these are all women artists who are looking at the bodies of men. So they're reversing that old equation in which male artists look at female subjects. And it's worth getting in close to Fiona Partington's suite of five black and white images, because not only does she dwell very appreciatively on the scars and marks that have accumulated on this particular male body, but she's also scraped and marked the surface of the photographs themselves. So here's an artist who's saying that not only do you make an image of a seductive and appealing body, but the artwork itself, the surface of the photograph, should also be seductive, a kind of second skin. If you spin around from Fiona and walk into the last and backspace in the gallery, you'll see an area where you may, for a moment, feel some puzzlement, because nude and naked bodies are not apparent in all of the works in this room. And this is a surprisingly common thing in art of the present moment. Plenty of artists want to find ways to evoke the life of the body without necessarily depicting it in the old, stereotypical and sometimes cliched ways. So one of the first works in this space is by the painter and writer John Hurrell. And there are no nude bodies here. Instead, there is text, small pasta letters which have been glued to the surface of the work. And the words here have been lifted from a novel by the late great American writer John Updike, famous for his interest in the erotic and the ways in which writing can evoke the life of the body. And John Hurrell has edited and repeated and cut and spliced these texts in a way that evokes the coming and going of physical desire. To the right of him, Jude Ray creates a painting covered with drapery. And it seems to me that the longer you look at this work, the more you begin to suspect that something, perhaps a body, perhaps some bodies, are concealed behind this immaculately painted surface. Grant Lingard, to the right of Jude Ray, also evokes the body, not by showing it directly, but by showing things that may touch or come close to it. In his case, underpants and a pair of boots that have been sculpted from scented soap. So those are some of the ways in which contemporary artists are coming at and coming to the body in art. So those are some thoughts about the works in The Naked and the Nude. I don't necessarily hope you agreed with all of them, and in fact I think that's one of the striking things about the nude in art. It inspires passion, and above all, it inspires passionate disagreement.